Hello, everyone. Welcome to Make a Difference Radio. Our show will air every week on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Each week, we will spotlight a different nonprofit organization and the people and businesses that support them. We are trying to create an awareness for their causes and assist them in spreading their message, as well as show the community ways that they can get involved with helping. We are also placing a strong emphasis on corporate responsibility, because given the continued state of our economy, it is now more important than ever that businesses do their part to help these great organizations. This show is brought to you today by Swipe for Change, whose mission is to create consistent and recurring donation streams for nonprofit organizations by leveraging business merchant accounts at no additional cost to the business. Please visit swipeforchange.com or call 1-800-219-5727 for more information.
Hello, everyone. Derek Van Dam here. I've got a great show for you today. We've got featured here the American Red Cross of Metro Atlanta. And what we'll be speaking about is a little bit about the organization's history and its evolution throughout the years. And we're also going to talk with some disaster relief volunteers about Severe Weather Month, and speak about the organization's response to last year's devastating tornadoes that we had throughout Alabama and parts of Georgia. And we're going to highlight the extensive reach of the Red Cross as it celebrates this year its 69th anniversary of March's designation by the President of the United States of America as Red Cross Month. So I have three guests with me today. I have Reuben Brown, who is a spokesperson for the American Red Cross of Atlanta. And I have two volunteers here. I have Mike Richardson and Eliza Levinson. Eliza Levinson. God, I thought I had that right. Okay. Welcome, everybody, today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're here. Reuben, why don't we start off a little bit with you? Tell me a little bit about the background of the American Red Cross in general, nationwide. Tell me a little bit about the founding of the organization and what it is you do today.
Sure. Well, the Red Cross is international in scope. As a matter of fact, most independent countries have their own Red Cross or Red Crescent Society. In places where Spanish is spoken, it's known as La Cruz Roja. In places where French is spoken, La Croix Rouge. And in Israel, it's known as Magen David Adam, and in Muslim nations, it's known as the Red Crescent. Now, even though those entities differ in terms of where they're situated around the world, the one thing that ties them all together is that they look after or see after the seven tenets of the American or the Red Cross, and those are the tenets of humanity, impartiality, independence, neutrality, unity, universality, and volunteer service. And first amongst all of those principles is the principle of humanity, which quite simply says that the Red Cross will see to your needs if you're involved in a disaster, if you're a needy person, a needy human being, no matter your race, your creed, your color, the Red Cross will tend to those needs.
When did the organization begin?
Well, the Red Cross was started back in the 1800s by Henri Dunant in Europe, the Battle of Italy, and he saw the battlefield, which was strewn with bodies of the dead and the dying. And he reasoned that surely there should be an organization that saw to those needs, a humanitarian organization. And hence he started the International Red Cross. In 1881 here in the United States, Clara Barton, a school teacher and activist, saw the same need here during the Civil War. And she saw the dead and the dying lying strewn across the battlefield. And she, like Henri Dunant years earlier, saw that there was a need for an organization that took care of those needs, the needs of the people who were forlorn, people who were without. And that was the origin of the Red Cross back in 1881. The organization was chartered in 1900 and again in 1905 by Congress to respond to disaster. So the Red Cross is chartered to respond to disaster. That's our congressional responsibility.
Great. And I understand that there is a month that is specifically dedicated to the Red Cross. Can you tell us what month that is and a little bit of the background with that?
Absolutely. Well, although Congress chartered the Red Cross, we receive no government funding. Many people think that, you know, somehow the government funds our organization, and that's a misnomer. The Red Cross is dependent on voluntary contributions from the public, from businesses, other private entities. So Red Cross Month started back in the 1940s, really. During the first 25 years of its existence, the Red Cross had no formal fundraising mechanism in place. And so when disaster struck, the call would go out for people to send money to help the needy. In 1917, President Woodrow Wilson ordered the Red Cross to raise money in support of the U.S. effort during World War I. Well, in 1941, the Red Cross again had to raise money to support the U.S. effort during World War II. In 1943, the Red Cross again raised money to support the U.S. effort during World War II, and it was during that year that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was honorary chair of the Red Cross, a reason that at some point the Red Cross would again, or the public would again rely on the Red Cross. And it was during that year that he proclaimed March as Red Cross Month, and that's been the case ever since.
That's great. And obviously right around the corner, so a very timely time for us to be chatting. Well, in terms of some of the day-to-day things that currently take place now in the organization, can you give a rundown of really some of the areas that you focus on?
Absolutely. Well, we have lines of service, health and safety principally. We do CPR, first aid. We train people on how to help with health emergencies. If a person has a cardiac incident, a cardiac emergency, they're having trouble breathing, choking, and the Red Cross can help you to deal with those situations. Strains, sprains, dislocations, and fractures. That's part and parcel of what the Red Cross does. We also do disaster relief and assistance. In fact, here in the Metro Atlanta area, the Red Cross responds to, on average, about 3 to 4 home fires every single day. And that's important to know because quite often when people think about the Red Cross, they think about big disasters like tornadoes and floods and hurricanes. And while that's a big part of what we do, home fires are an even larger part. And so it's important that the public know about that as well. We also have a program that we call Service to Armed Forces. We serve as a go-between, an intermediary for our military servicemen who need resources, who need to send messages to their loved ones who are stateside, which is sort of serve as a middleman to help them get those messages across. And then we have blood, of course. The Red Cross is the nation's blood bank. In fact, we provide almost half of the nation's blood supply.
Really?
That's a very important part of what we do. So if you're a cancer patient, a trauma patient, sickle cell, a leukemia patient, and you need blood, the chances are very good that you're going to get that blood from the American Red Cross.
Oh, that's great. I never was aware of that. I would have thought it would have been just maybe hospitals or the like, but no, it's 50%.
Well, we supply hospitals. I mean, hospitals come to seek to the Red Cross for those blood supplies. In fact, here in the Southeast, or in Georgia, I should say, the Red Cross provides about 120 hospitals with the blood that they use for their patients.
Oh, amazing. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I also understand that we're coming into the severe weather season. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, you know, spring, typically the seasons start to change. The weather is a little bit more unsettling. We saw even back a few weeks ago, we had a tornado outbreak in our neighbor, Alabama, next door. So it's that time of year. And so we want people to be aware that the weather can change very quickly. The Red Cross has a program that we call Be Red Cross Ready. We encourage people to get a disaster kit, to be informed, and to get the types of training that they would need to prepare for disasters. So, you know, again, it's spring. Severe weather season normally starts in Georgia in the southeast around February and peaks in April. In fact, last year, if you'll remember, we had that horrible tornado outbreak in Alabama.
Right.
And we also had some tornado activity in northwest Georgia. So it's the time of year for people to really keep their eyes to the skies, to get their NOAA weather radios, to pay attention to changing weather conditions, and to be aware of what's going on with the weather.
Great. Well, this is a good chance to open up to our some of our volunteers that we have here today. Mike, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about what your role.
Well, first of all, I'd like to comment on the disaster planning that was just spoken about. Mm-hmm. It's so very important that our families not only prepare for the weather events that may be moving in, but they also need to prepare for disasters that may happen at any time at their own house. It is, in our experience, we have seen so many families totally unorganized. A major fire occurs in their house at 2:00 in the morning. Everybody's half asleep. They rush to get out. You know, they push the kids out the door. And then it goes through a very traumatic time in their life when they get outside and they cannot pull all the family together because the family scatters. And therefore, then the firemen arrive, they don't know if somebody's still in the house or if everybody's out of the house. So there's a lot of planning families need to do on an ongoing basis to make sure that if you have to evacuate your house, everybody in the family understands there is a certain place out in the yard, across the street, that everybody gathers to so that, you know, you can make sure that everybody is out of the fire.
Does the Red Cross offer any kind of tips or guides on good ways for people to plan for this?
Yes, sir, we do. There's numerous times that we go out into the community for various fairs or community events and set up a table and pass out brochures that talk about planning. We actually even go into schools and make presentations to the school children about, you know, planning. It's not only how to use 911, but it's also, okay, if a fire happens, does everybody in your family know where to meet on the outside? So it's very important that the family keeps up with that and knows all what they need to do to take care of their safety.
Aliza?
Additionally, and this isn't directly with the Red Cross, you can also approach your local fire department. I know I have fire extinguishers throughout my house, but they're very intimidating unless you've ever used one before. And you can actually request your local fire department, perhaps for your neighborhood, to get a fire extinguisher and give you a chance to use it, and also to teach you what the limitations are, what you can do with it and what you can't, when you need to go out, get out, and what you might actually be able to handle.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, a lot of people might try to put, you know, a whole house on fire with one small fire extinguisher. Probably isn't going to do it. But the flip side of the coin is there could be a time where the fire is small enough where by using that extinguisher correctly, they might save the whole house from becoming on fire if they act quickly enough. So that's a very good point. Now, Bill?
All right, we'll go back to the question you asked, you know, about how I got involved.
Mm-hmm.
I've been involved in volunteer services as long as I can remember, even back to my childhood. You know, my family always saw that all the members of the family were involved in various activities that helped the community and helped our neighbors. So, you know, when I came to Atlanta, you know, I still continue to be involved, but I've only been involved with the Red Cross for about the last 5 years. And when I decided to go there, I was looking for an organization that I could go to that I felt that at the end of the day I could look at and say, yes, I've made a difference in the life of somebody. And the Red Cross provides that opportunity. You know, when you walk away from a fire at the end of the day and you've helped a family, you know that that family appreciates what you have done. You know that you've helped them and given them directions on recovery and where they need to go. And you've also met some of the immediate needs that they have, maybe some food to eat, some clothes to wear, or, you know, or even a night's lodging in a local hotel.
Sure. Can you remember a specific situation that stands out to you more than most in reference to a time where people were, where you really helped them and they were very appreciative?
Oh, I tell you what, you know, we always remember our volunteers seem to always remember, and I do, my first outing when I was my very first as a trainee going out on a Sunday morning at 5 o'clock out in the Lawrenceville area. And it was a lady, I say it was full of five ladies. It was two adults and three children, but they were grandmother, mother, and three younger children. And they were all forced out of their house, and here they came out of the house in nothing but their nightgowns, most of them in their barefoot, a couple of them in slippers. And, you know, that's the way you walk into situations. You know, people actually are forced out of their house. They have very little clothing on. What do? You know, that's not all the time, but, you know, that happened that day. And to be able to walk away that day, now the neighbors responded immediately by giving them coats and by giving them house coats and things of that nature by covering them up, which they needed. But nevertheless, at the end of the day, they left that scene with something in their hand to where they could go to a store and buy a set of clothes. They had a card in their hand where they could get some food to eat, and they could also had a place to go lay down that night, you know, in a local hotel. They had to have something because they lost everything. They came out, no purses. Their car even burned up in the garage. So they were absolutely a family that rushed out of their house and lost absolutely everything. And when you run into something and you help those people like that, you know you have given somebody help. Help that they can feel, that they can grab hold of, and the people will show you their appreciation to you. You know, there's in the Red Cross between the workers and the clients, there's a lot of hugging goes on.
I bet. It's good in that situation that though they lost their material things, at least they all made it out with their lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Aliza, tell me a little bit about your...
Well, my first experience, I was still a trainee, and while Mike had trial by fire, I actually had trial by flood. I was a trainee at the time of the Atlanta floods. And my first outing was to an apartment complex. Actually, it was the Saturday before it was declared a national disaster, and I went out to a multiple apartment flood. And at that point, I think people were, it was just starting to understand what was going on, but it hadn't quite gotten into the various departments yet. So we had people who were on a city bus, was temporary housing, and it became my job. As a trainee, I went on the bus, and the people were getting awfully tired of being there. And I think what I remember most was, well, two things, really. One, the look in somebody's eyes when you hand them a bottle of water, something as simple as a bottle of water, and the gratitude is overwhelming. So it's very touching at that level. The other thing is that people need information. When there's such disorganization, when there's a disaster, especially a large one, I mean, even a small one, when Mike talks about families dispersing after a fire, but people were eager for information. They wanted to know what was going on, and the Red Cross does that as well, both internationally, locally, and during individual fires and disasters.
Speaking of those big floods in Atlanta, which were obviously a big event here in the news, as I remember the Six Flags being half underwater during that time. Douglas County in particular got hit very hard, and I think Cobb as well. That must have been a very trying time for all of you. I bet you probably didn't get a whole lot of sleep around then.
No, we didn't. I mean, that relief effort lasted all of about 3 weeks. And, you know, I guess the Red Crossers know that when disaster starts, we're in it for the long haul. If it's a short-lived disaster or a short-lived response, we'll take care of it in that vein. But if it's something that lasts longer and we need reinforcements from our other chapters, we can handle it that way as well. So I believe that relief effort, that emergency relief effort for the Red Cross, lasted just a little over 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between the floods and the kind of response we do there and the local fires, in that was declared a national disaster.
Sure.
And so there's a different part of the Red Cross, something called DSHR, and to this day I'm not even sure what that stands for. Perhaps Ruben can tell us. But that is a database of people who are available and trained in different aspects of major disaster relief. Some do sheltering, some will handle the food, some will handle, you know, various aspects. Sure. We have nurses on staff. I know it was during a flu epidemic that we had the flooding. So we had nurses there, and they actually started giving flu shots in the shelters. So it's a different kind of thing when you have mass disaster.
Sure.
And to Elisa's point, it stands for Disaster Services Human Resources. Yes, ma'am.
I thought but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, but that's the database. Seriously, that's the database that the Red Cross uses to summon volunteers. We have a database of volunteers here in the metro Atlanta area, throughout Georgia, throughout the country. And if there is a disaster situation that exceeds the capacity of Atlanta, for example, they can go into that system and then summon volunteers outside the Georgia area. And I think that the Atlanta floods is a great example, or the Georgia floods, that was a great example, because we had volunteers come here as far as away as from Alaska.
Wow.
We had people coming from New York, people coming from California to help us out right here in the Atlanta area. And so that's something that we're very proud of that Red Cross network. The hundreds of chapters which are situated throughout the country can all descend on a disaster relief operation at any given time.
That particular flood is one that was, affected about everyone who lived in the Atlanta area.
Sure.
One way or the other, through inconvenience or whatever. It was very widespread. It wasn't localized like a tornado hit in North Gwinnett County, you know, up and down a particular subdivision. It was metro-wide. And while the majority of the flooding may have occurred over in Cobb County and Paulding County in that area, I started out at 3 o'clock that morning in Gwinnett County with a call to go respond to a flooding situation. And, you know, it was always with disasters, they start off with the local folks. Right. We respond, and then once we get a feel for, wait a minute, this is not just happening here, it's happening yonder, it's happening here, and we were able to pull together the magnitude of it, that's when we pull upon the greater resources of the Red Cross in general, you know, not only across Atlanta, but across the state and then across the nation. And that's what happened that day.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were also someone that was on the scene at the Alabama tornadoes that devastated parts of the state. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. Now, I personally was not there.
Oh.
But, you know, I had quite a few friends who were there. And that was, they were already there. We had a whole group of people who were already on the scene in Tuscaloosa that day. They had been over there for a week dealing with storms that the area had had the week before.
Sure.
A lot of people may have not known that. Not around here, but over there they did. And they were dealing with those storms that had happened out in the area a week before. And then all of a sudden, a group of them were getting in the car ready to return to Atlanta on that day and were told they could not leave because the weather was so bad they would not let them back out on the road. And they were told to go to their hotel and to bunker down or whatever term you want to use, which they did. They left the Red Cross Center, went over to the hotel and, you know, for protection from the storms that were coming in. And lo and behold, the tornado that came in hit the Red Cross Center. Chapter headquarters.
Yes.
So it's lucky that they were unfortunate that the Red Cross released all their local workers to go home because they knew it was going to be a major disaster. And they sent the workers from the outside back to their hotels. But nevertheless, you know, they come back with stories like I don't want to see, you know, talk
sure.
about the destruction and,
yeah.
And the loss of life that, you know, that they observed and all. Those kinds of things you don't want to see. But it's great that they were there to help those people simply because people are so disorganized. And I'm not talking about your agencies that go in. I'm talking about the people themselves. They're shell-shocked.
Sure.
You know, we've seen...
Traumatized, yeah.
Traumatized. Mm-hmm. You see these movies where they try to show it from war movies and things of that nature to where these guys come out and they're shell-shocked. They're traumatized. Well, that's the way these people are. And they're just sitting there and they see the damage to their house. And that doesn't make it whether it's a national disaster or your house is just burned down. They're so traumatized, they really can't connect back. What do I do next?
Sure.
And that's what the Red Cross goes in and helps them make that directional. This is what you need to do next.
Got it.
Another aspect of the trauma that Mike's talking about, people are different during disasters. We have this flight or fight response.
Sure.
And when people can't leave, they turn, they can get aggressive. And sometimes you can see that in the shelters. It was my first time out setting up the Woodstock shelter during the floods, and we had two people who started fighting over a cot, who was going to sleep where. And it started to escalate, and there was a police officer who was on the scene and wanted to step in. And fortunately, I had had Red Cross training in psychological first aid and understood what was going on with these two people. So I asked the police officer to give me 3 minutes, and I said, if I can't defuse this in 3 minutes, I want you to come in. And I went over to the people, and I said something that really makes a lot of sense, is that you are both very nice people in an abnormal situation. You're normal people in an abnormal situation, and this is how you're reacting to it. And then I invited them to come see me later. I actually went to work in the kitchen. And both of them sought me out to talk more about this. So it's a different psychology in these kinds of situations. And we do offer special training in this.
Oh, that's great. It's a good point that you make is that, you know, PTSD is not just something that is isolated to the war zones. I mean, having your home destroyed, barely escaping with your life, I mean, that's, you know, we had wounded warriors on last week and bombs landed in bunkers and situations that caused some of these things. But I can easily see how this would happen in mm-hmm. this situation.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about you know, in terms of the Red Cross volunteers in general, if a person was interested in becoming a Red Cross volunteer, how would they go about doing that?
Well, we have two ways. You can go to our website at AtlantaRedCross.org and find information there, or you can call us directly. Our number is 404-876-3302. Again, 404-876-3302. And that's the best way to contact us. And if you speak with somebody, they'll be able to get you to the introductory courses that you need to take. And they offer extensive training. Very valuable training.
And the courses are free.
And the courses are free. If you're volunteering, all your courses are free.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, great. And in addition to the Red Cross having help in terms of volunteers, I'm assuming that the fundraising aspect is probably a big part of the organization as well. Is that if a person wants to help? I know that when there are disasters, you'll often see something like you can text to this and this number. Is that something that's available throughout the whole year?
Yes, you can text Red Cross to 90999 to make a donation to the Red Cross, and that is available. You can also go to redcross.org, which is our national website, or call 1-800-RED-CROSS, 1-800-REDCROSS. If you want to make a donation to the Red Cross. But we're always needing donations, as I mentioned earlier, that you know, it's not just the tornadoes and the hurricanes and the big disasters, but it's the home fires that consume Red Cross resources every single day. You know, think about the fact that we have to put fuel in vehicles that go to the disaster scenes.
Sure.
We have to stock warehouses with cots, blankets, in some cases meals ready to eat, Cambros, which are thermos-like containers that we put food in when we take our vehicles out on the road. We have to train volunteers. We have to transport volunteers in some cases. All of that takes money, and that's something that we want to impress upon the public. So when you think about the Red Cross, when you think about that constant need for donations, think about those behind-the-scenes costs that go into a disaster relief operation, and then it all makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Another point is that I know when they talk about charitable donations, what portion of each dollar actually gets used, expended for the work, the mission of that organization. And Red Cross has one of the highest ratios. We do very little. I don't hear a whole lot of fundraising. And I think one of the things that people do not understand about our organization that hampers both fundraising and perhaps getting recruitment of volunteers is that the people who come and those trucks and those Red Cross trucks are your neighbors.
Right.
And I know I have people on both sides of me. When I told them what I was doing with the Red Cross, they were amazed. And I told them it was an all-volunteer organization and we run solely on donations. It was new to them. Somehow people have it in their heads, perhaps the congressional charter, that we are a government organization, and we're not.
Right.
So we need people, we need money.
No, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think from my understanding, I think it's something like 91% of what comes in goes to the actual cause of helping out and humanitarian aid. That's a very good statistic. Being in the industry of working with nonprofits on a regular basis, that's a metric that we look at very closely. And if an organization does 75% or better, they're considered good. 91% is a very lean and mean organization.
And yet there's the humanity, the element involved in that. And this is one thing that really spoke to me when I was taking my coursework. If we have different policies that we have to adhere to when we're administering, when we're giving, passing out funds to people, criteria that have to be met. However, what I did hear is that if we are going to make a mistake, if we're going to err in assigning people funds, we're always going to err on the side of our clients.
Sure.
And that is very important, and it's one of the reasons that I love this organization.
Well, that's great. Does anyone else have anything else that they'd like to add today?
Oh, I think regarding the subject, when you read the Red Cross materials, I was very impressed when I read them the first time, and it said a volunteer-led organization, and that is so true.
Right.
As Elise said, the people that you see out doing the work, I put it, out in the field, they're the volunteers. Well, the only time, sometimes you'll see people people like Ruben standing there in front of a camera. That's when staff comes out for the most time. The volunteers are the ones who are out there in the field doing the job. And it is truly a volunteer-led organization from the top down all the way.
Yeah, and to Mike's point, the Red Cross is predominated by volunteers. And, you know, as a staff member, I can't say enough or thank them enough for what they do on a daily basis. You know, if you're watching the news or you're listening to the news and you hear about a fire that broke out in the dead of night, and you hear about a person that got up at 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, that person probably is going to be a volunteer. And as they've said so eloquently, it's your neighbor. It's a person maybe that you know, maybe that you don't know, but certainly it should serve as inspiration for all of us to want to pull together to volunteer to make our communities stronger and safer places to live.
I want to point out that it's not always, all the workers are not necessarily out in the field. I happen to do something, I do dispatch, which is a little different. I do it from my home. I use my computer. I get calls from the National Call Center. Our fire department would call the National Red Cross Call Center in Washington, D.C. They'll call the dispatcher on duty, which would be, I'm just one of many. And then we put together the teams that Mike is talking about to go out. And this is why we need so many volunteers. We do six-hour shifts. We need to have staffing 24/7 for these shifts. And sometimes it's hard for me to find people. If they're not signed up, I have to go down the list, do a search, find people, wake them up in the middle of the night sometimes, even though they're not on shift. And people go.
Right.
People go. People go because they love the organization and they love the work they do.
How many volunteers do you think we have here in Metro Atlanta?
In the Metro Atlanta area, you have just north of about 850 volunteers.
Any idea what it is nationwide?
Nationwide, it numbers in the thousands. I think the last count is like 500,000 volunteers and then throughout the nation. But that number, it fluctuates, you know, based on people's availability, based on the fact that some people have been volunteering for years. So as our volunteers so eloquently said, we need a constant stream of volunteers to come in and support the organization. Disasters don't take holidays. Disasters don't know certain times of year. Disasters can occur any time of the day, any time of the year. And so that's why we need people to step forward and to support the Red Cross. If you really think about it, there aren't any organizations like the American Red Cross.
Sure.
You know, an organization that comes in when disaster strikes to provide support to people, both here locally, regionally, and in far-flung places, and has a strong network of volunteers to respond to all manner of disaster, provides training for people, has the history that the Red Cross has. It's an American institution.
Great.
We were on our way here for the interview, and as we were walking into the office, they had a TV monitor on, and there was somebody in a Red Cross helmet in Honduras, this fire that has broken out in a prison and has killed many prisoners. And there are Red Cross workers there. And I see that, and it makes me so proud to know that while I do work locally, I am part of a web that covers the entire world.
That's wonderful.
It's just an amazing organization.
Well, let me also, I know Ruben did it, but let me also thank both of you for your volunteer work that you do. It's a very unselfish thing that you do to help other people in a time in their life where they really absolutely need it. And while I've never gone through that experience myself, I can only imagine how traumatizing it is, and having somebody like you there to help walk them through it and help provide them with shelter or clothing or, as you mentioned, a bottle of water. I've got to imagine that that's a wonderful thing. So thank you for doing what you do. It's great to hear these stories, and it's so much why we enjoy doing the show. So I want to thank you all for being on today. This was a great segment. I learned some good things about this. I didn't know the part about the blood. That's very interesting, being the largest blood bank in the country. And so Ruben and Mike and Aliza, thank you so much for being here today.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Great. And this is Derek Van Dam signing off with Make a Difference Radio. To listen to this show later or to listen to previous recordings of Make a Difference Radio, please visit www.swipeforchange.com/blog.